This is Terry Crosby.
Andy Steiger.
Welcome to the AC Podcast. On this podcast, we want to help you understand and speak the language of our culture and address questions being asked with intellectual honesty, gentleness, and respect. Well, today we got a guest in studio, John Lifehacks Morrison. Welcome back.
I didn't know that was my nickname. I've been called worse.
Well, I'm doing a little promotion for you there too, right?
Thank you very much, Terry.
Yeah.
It's great to be back and good to rub shoulders with you guys once again in this studio.
Well, we're going to talk a little bit more about what you're into right now, but there is some shout outs to you because you, just to start things off, you've been nominated with the Best New Business in Abbotsford Award.
That's right. Yeah.
That just was announced last week or so.
Yeah. I'll find out next month if we actually get it. But it was quite an honor to have Get Clear Consulting recognized by our local chamber. So,
okay. Well, we'll get more into your business. Well, back in studio also, fresh off the plane from Scotland.
Still dealing with jet lag.
Mr. Andy Steiger.
Andy Steiger, it's good to be here. Good to be here.
Also known as I Have the Steiger.
I Have the Steiger, which my kids, they love that.
Yeah.
Andy Steiger, while jet lag, has more personality than most of us on our best after Red Bull.
Bless you, John.
Well, today the headlines are marijuana is legal everywhere across Canada. That's what's going on today in Canada.
Which there's some irony there, though, because although it's legal across Canada, in most parts of Canada, you actually can't purchase it. Well, like in a store, you actually order it online, which is kind of comical in that we are also in the midst of a strike in the Postal Service. So
right.
There's going to be some upset people waiting for their doobie.
Well, I have a story for you guys associated with that. We usually start the podcast with a little dig from the internet.
You got a little something there?
I got a little something. Is there a humane way to boil lobsters alive?
I was just wondering that question earlier today. Thank you. This is really helping.
This is
already.
Deep, right?
Yes.
This is where
so
we go.
You can tell how deep I go. That thought has never crossed my mind. It's how quickly can you boil a lobster? Right.
I know. Charlotte Gill, the owner of Charlotte's legendary lobster pound in Southwest Harbor, Maine, is getting lobsters high, boiling them alive. I feel bad that when lobsters come here, there is no exit strategy. Gil, who has a state-issued medical marijuana license, told the publication, "It's a unique place, and you get to do such unique things, but at the expense of the little creature. I've really been trying to figure out how to make it feel better." Solution, yeah. Sedating the lobsters by blowing weed smoke into their enclosures.
I'm just getting hit with this for the first time. I really want to make sure I have some comprehensive good thoughts. Even though I said I was thinking about it, I actually wasn't at all.
I could only imagine going into a prison where somebody's on death row and you're like, listen, in a moment you're going to be electrocuted to death, or in this case, boiled to death. But don't worry. We're going to get
blow
you
some
high
smoke
first.
Into your face.
Yeah, we're going to blow some smoke into your jail cell for a while.
She also has the idea of infusing the smoke into the water tank. So she's actually going to use some kind of mattress pump it into the water.
Right.
So these little creatures, these little
Croissants. No.
Croissants.
They're very Christian, though. They
crustaceans.
I guess we really need, because we're on the Apologetics Canada podcast, we're not just talking as connoisseurs of lobster. We need to think like philosophers, right? So from a worldview perspective, is there a soul of the lobster that we need to be worried about? I mean, is not everybody doomed to the same fate? Just get high before your death? I mean, is that not from a philosophical perspective?
Well, I think the audience just left.
I just want to dip lobster into butter and eat it. Yes. One thing, though, that is making me think about this, Terry, is it makes me wonder what license restaurants are going to have moving forward here in Canada to incorporate cannabis into different dishes. I wonder if that will be possible. I don't know. And I can only imagine how creative people are going to get with the kind of dishes that they make, like lobster infused
cannabis a lobster water. Infused edible.
Yeah.
These lobsters were infused with marijuana from the ethically traded, fair, sourced
boiling process.
Locally grown marijuana.
It's a whole new world out there, Terry.
There is. All right, we're going to move on. Today we're going to talk a little theology, vocation, a little story, and sprinkle in a little bit of apologetics in there, I think, today. So I think what we're going to start with right now is the concept or idea of the theology of work or vocation. So, I mean, today we have such a dichotomy, I think, between the secular and the sacred in a lot of people's minds. So they don't take their Christianity so much to work, I guess, as much as they should. My question, does our Christianity change the way we approach work and vocation?
Well, I'll just start. One of the things I think is interesting about this, and I know, John, that you've also taught at Bible colleges as well. But whenever I've taught at a Bible college, I actually tend to ask for year two and higher now when I teach, because the first year college student is an interesting beast to deal with. But one of the things that I have found so often is that you will have either non-Christians or very new to Christianity students that come. That's who often are who head off to Bible college. And then on the total extreme other pole, you'll have those who are diehard committed, want to become, pastors, missionaries. But I find that those are the two extremes you have. And I think what I'm getting at is that as I spoke with those students and met with them, what I found was this idea that if you become a Christian and you want to be a committed Christian, that means you go into ministry.
Right.
And yeah, that's kind of the way that they understand it. John, did you find the same?
Yeah, I mean, certainly I was that person for many years. I felt called to ministry at 20. And that's, the friends that I went to Bible school with, we all went into ministry together, and then some would drop out and, we'd say, oh, so sad that they're not doing the real Christian work anymore. And then I found myself part of that very statistic without a pastoral job. So I didn't have the title of pastor, and it wasn't really an identity crisis. It was more like do I actually want to be a Christian now because it's good and it's right? Or did I just want to do it because it paid my bills, right? I was paid to be a good Christian. And all of a sudden, when I found myself without the title pastor, I really had to think through, okay, let's go for this now without a paycheck close to it. And nobody's, no board is holding me accountable. No pastoral staff team that I'm rubbing shoulders with around the water cooler talking about our favorite disciple anymore. So I actually had to be a Christian in the workforce, and it's opened up a whole new world.
So how
for
does
me.
It look from the other side of the fence?
and maybe give us a little bit of, for those people who don't know you, give us a little bit of your story.
Yeah, sure. So I was pastoring in the Lower Mainland for a while and doing apologetics ministry. So always in partnership with Apologetics Canada. I equate it to a game of musical chairs where everybody's kind of circling around the chairs, and then the person organizing the game removes a chair, and then somebody's left standing when the music stops. So I felt like at one point the music stopped and I was looking around for a chair, and everybody was seated and I was just kind of looking around and I was like, where do I fit in this world? So I had this apologetics focus with an evangelism bent. That's kind of one of my main giftings, and I love to preach and I love to lead, but I didn't fit anywhere. And so after looking for a whole year to find the right spot, I just felt like God was calling me elsewhere. And so I wanted to start a business. We talked a little bit about this in the 200th episode.
Yeah.
But not in the kind of detail that I was kind of thinking, this story kind of needs to get out a little bit. So as I was looking around and feeling like maybe God wanted me to pursue this entrepreneurial side, that maybe I had some gifts that could actually apply to the workforce, it was in getting in that world, all of a sudden I started finding myself more and more distanced from, say, my pastor friends. And I had to really think through, maybe I was carrying a bit of an arrogance, thinking that the strongest Christians go into ministry. And then I started to meet really passionate Christians outside of there that were just sitting in the pews every week. And yet they were so committed to the gospel, to reaching their friends and neighbors, raising their families, and growing great businesses that fed a lot of people, served well, and embodied Christian values as well. And so those are the kind of people that I've now started to connect with and say, this is the kind of man that I want to be. This is the kind of business leader that I want to be as well. So it's a total shift. And a lot of people are just like, it's totally different from what I knew of you before. But to be honest, maybe that's the calling that God has for me in this next season of life. And so I just want to be faithful to him in that.
I think this is such an important point because so many people have this idea that, like, listen, if I want to be a committed Christian, I need to be a missionary. Or if I want to be a committed Christian, I got to be a pastor. Or if I want to do apologetics, I need to start Apologetics Canada or whatever that might be. But the reality is, and this is something I think is just so important for Christians to grasp, is that we've all been called to ministry. Where we've been called to ministry looks different for each one of us. And so you might be a mailman, right? Or whatever the business is that you work in. And that is your ministry field. That is where you are. You know, by the way, my mom runs a daycare. My mom has led more people to the Lord than I have running a daycare.
Awesome.
She loves talking with people, loves sharing the gospel. It is just a natural part of her life. And by the way, I got to get this off my chest because one of the things that drives me a little bit crazy on this point, and I wouldn't mind hearing your guys' thoughts, is I think a lot of Christians get this point wrong as well. You are called to live the gospel, not make people into gospel projects. Mm-hmm. We've been called to love God and to love people. And a natural aspect of loving a person is talking with them about truth, right, and about the reality of life that is found in Jesus. That should just be a natural outworking of who we are as human beings, not trying to find different project people that I'm going to go evangelize.
Totally. The question my wife and I have been talking with is, did we love our neighbors because we wanted them to come to our church, because we wanted to baptize them, because it would look great to baptize your neighbor and tell the story the next week about how everybody should be doing this?
Chalk one up.
And, you know, I was so embarrassed. Like, that's the kind of thing that I've had time now to reflect. And now when I love my neighbors, like, it doesn't reflect well with my board or whatever. No one's asking me, as Andy's commissioned us, to love our neighbors. I mean, I guess Jesus commissioned us. But the truth is that I think it's way more heroic to love somebody when it's not going to reflect on your paycheck or your annual review, but just because you love them, because Jesus told you to love them, and because you're finding stuff that is lovable about them.
Second greatest commandment, right? Love your neighbor as yourself.
Mm-hmm. By the way, just to note that follows from the first. Yep. Right. When you love God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength, you will love what God loves, and God loves people. He will, and this is the beauty of the gospel, that God changes your heart and turns a heart of stone into a heart of flesh, and you begin to care for people.
Yeah.
It's such an important aspect. So to go along with what you're saying, John, you take that heart wherever you are, mm-hmm, whatever workforce you find yourself in.
Yeah. And I think the work is part of how you love God. It's part of being human, right? To do work is part of the cultural mandate, I believe. Adam was commissioned with work before the fall. And so you can honor God and worship him by doing good work. I think it was Luther that said, a shoemaker once came to him and said, oh, I want to serve God. Should I get into the ministry? And he said, if you're a shoemaker, the best way to love God is to make amazing shoes. And mm-hmm, and you will bring glory to God by doing that. That's how I see it, is like, this is part of my worship to show up on Monday morning and do excellent work to serve my clients.
Awesome. We want to go through a few points with you. And the first one, there is a great need for men and women of character. You also say, when you stick to Christian principles, people will trust you. We kind of talked about that a little bit, but do you want to add a little bit more to that?
Yeah, I was told in the beginning that part of, we'll call it sales, but you're basically selling yourself and what you do to somebody that's calling you, whether it be a lead from the internet or a referral from somebody. But the question they're asking is, can I trust this person? Can I trust you with my reputation, with my money, with my time? Should I enter into a business transaction with you? And if people are asking the question of trust, and I just say, well, what are we doing to build trust? What am I doing to build trust so that you can say, you know, I want to work with you. I want to enter into this business partnership. But I think there's a lot of question marks that people have based on cultural things that have happened, the Me Too movement, people making big mistakes with swindling money. I mean, the headlines are always full of broken trust stories where someone trusted the person and then the trust was broken. So that what's going to happen is people are going to read those stories and then say, well, maybe I got my guard up a little more. So I think the question that as Christians we need to say is, are we communicating and promoting ourselves and our businesses in a way that creates trust? And the best way to have trust is to live a life of character. So when you're on the call or when you're pitching who you are and what you do, that's when you're on. But where you build the kind of character and earn trust is when no one's looking, and when you're not on the call, when you're having to make the right decision, no matter how difficult it is, right? And that builds up a repertoire of character. And so I've been preaching that for years to people about the importance of character and how God's growing our character. But I never really thought this will actually apply in the workforce, that I can be a man and a leader of character, and that it will actually lead to more trust, which will lead to more business. So it's just an interesting thing that was a crossover from the church world, where we learn all about the importance of sanctification and character, and it crosses over.
Where mostly you learned about character, you applied it to your life, and now being outside the church, you're acting it out.
That's right.
In those situations.
It's an interesting opportunity as well for the gospel, in that I find more and more in our culture today, especially in these movements that you were just referencing, John, that people are looking for people with character. I mean, look at what just took place in the United States with the Supreme Court, right? What kind of a person do they want? I don't want to get into that debate about, okay, was what was said true or not. That's not the point that I'm getting at. I'm just getting at culture in general is looking for a certain type of person that doesn't do certain types of things and whose moral compass looks a certain way. That's interesting given the secular culture that we find ourselves in, and asking the follow-up question, well, where are you going to find that kind of morality? Well, and I think it's an opportunity for us to demonstrate in our lives and help people to see, well, you're going to find that in Christ. Now, one thing, by the way, I think is really interesting for any pastors that are listening to this. I can't tell you the number of people that often will start coming to church. I'm sure you saw this too, John. They'll come to church once they've gotten married, they've had kids, and they go, man, I sure would like my kids not to be a total monster. Right? Where am I going to help them find some good morals? And then what do? Well, they go, I'm going to start bringing them to church.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's for sure. I mean, listen to the stuff that we talk about all the time. Like, why has God brought this bit of suffering into my life? And when we say it's because God wants to shape your character. He's more interested in your character than anything else. So that's where character is shaped. And God takes personal responsibility for that. I mean, that's what it talks about in Romans 9, that those he called, he conformed to the image of his son. God's always doing that. And
isn't that an interesting aspect, though, John, of evangelism that a lot of people don't think about, is that your sanctification is leading to others' sanctification. Like, your road in holiness and learning to be Christ-like, we often think about that very individualistically. And we don't realize that that's a part of evangelism, is your walk with the Lord is influencing other people, their view of Christ and their walk with the Lord.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and it's reflected in different ways, right? How you show the love that God has for that person to them could be through things like showing up on time for an appointment that you set, or making your yes be yes and your no be no. And those kinds of ways are just ways that we reflect character in business and in the regular world. That I think as a Christian, you have a mandate from Jesus to be like that for people.
And I think a big one on that, by the way, in the business world that I've seen and interacted with, is how you treat your employees. Listen, if you're listening to this and you're this podcast and you're a business owner, I think as Christian business owners, we have a responsibility with the way that we speak to our employees, the way that we treat them, and caring for them as human beings that speaks volumes. And it's interesting in culture right now, there are some businesses out there that are doing a great job at this, and it shows. I'd like to see more, though. Mm-hmm. I'd love for people to go, man, I'd love to work for a Christian business owner because they really know how to treat their employees. That's right.
So, Andy, you've talked about people coming back to the church looking for that moral compass, right? So there's another point here. The church is great for teaching us skills that work well in the marketplace. So you say you learned how to do marketing while pastoring a church.
Yeah. People don't think of the church as being a hub of pioneering front lines of marketing. But to me, it truly was. We had a crisis in the church where we were saying, we're not reaching young people. So then we said, well, let's go where the young people are congregating. And that's in social media, the internet, the digital world, whatever tools you need. I was a part of a group of men and women who were literally using anything they could, anything moral, to reach people. And when social media came up, they were the first ones making Facebook events, creating Facebook groups, using Instagram and creating videos and all that stuff. And it's like, when I switched jobs, I could just transfer all those skills over and be able to help people like dental labs and pharmaceutical companies and teach people how to do public speaking. And those kinds of things, they need to be doing social media as well. But it just was so natural to me as a pastor, as someone who's more entrepreneurial when it comes to reaching people. It just was an easy transition, which was totally different than kind of what you hear some slack-jawed young adults talking about, oh, the church is so backwards and the church never does anything. And yeah, there's a lot of places that need to get with the times, I would say, in their approaches to how they bring the gospel to the culture. But there's a lot of people. Then that was the circles that I was rolling in. They were already doing all that. While it's so easy for us to beat up on the church for not being ahead of the times enough, I actually found quite the opposite. The church really prepared me for life in the marketplace, and I'll always be thankful for that. So one of the shows that my wife and I watch is The Voice. And so every once in a while you have somebody.
I love that show.
It's just something we can do together.
Yes,
you know?
I think so. We need to meet every Monday and Tuesday. Meet you and your wife.
That sounds lovely. I'm sure she'd like that. Anyways, we watch, and then every once in a while somebody will just bring the house down with an amazing song, and then they'll ask, you know, or they'll show the montage of how they got there. I mean, I swear almost 9 times out of 10, it's like, I grew up singing in the church.
Yeah.
And you think, wow, isn't it awesome that there are places that exist to grow local talent where there's actually people singing every single week? And you know, you just don't get that without church.
Yeah.
And so I take that and I say, well, you know what? Isn't it awesome that there's a place that grooms people to learn how to craft arguments, simplify tough messages, mm-hmm. do public speaking, work a crowd, or learn how to develop teams and systems? All that stuff we're teaching in the church.
You know, it's funny. I had this conversation with my son recently. He's in junior high. He enjoys coming and being in church. But I said to him, listen, I go, son, this is an important place for you to learn how to engage in a sustained argument. Honestly, where else in our culture can you go and learn to listen for 30 minutes or 40 minutes, you know, to a sustained argument and to follow what's being taught? You're not going to deal with that until you get into college. I think it's interesting, right? That in Christianity, you're going to learn that skill, and it is a skill, very early on.
Mm-hmm. One thing I love about The Voice is that before the singer comes on, they have a story about them. And usually it's almost heart-wrenching where they came from, right? And where they are now. And that starts the whole thing for this individual, right? So we're going to talk a little bit about story right now. Another point you make, it says, if God is real, the Christian worldview will make sense in every area of this world, of his world, sorry. So take us on a little trip with that. What's your point in there?
Okay, so going back as a preacher, I always knew and I was taught this, that if you ever want to get people off their phones or interrupt their daydreams or get them paying attention to you again, start with a story, because people can't help but quit Candy Crush, close the app, and listen to your story about some person who had a problem, who wanted a certain solution but couldn't get it. And then all of a sudden they had some sort of incident that happened where they found the problem was resolved and then they ended up happily ever after. And then we are to add, in the same way, God is like this, or the Bible says this. But for that few moments, however many moments it is, when you've got people caught in a story, the neuroscience is actually very interesting, that it engages a part of a brain that actually turns off some of our logic and just gets into, we find ourselves swept into another world. So when you're in the middle of a story, your brain can't daydream. It just doesn't allow it. That's why I think as communicators, we were always told that stories are powerful. Jesus knew that. He told over 60% of what we have written about him from him is a story. So Jesus knew stories. All the best communicators know about stories. And so the Christian worldview is part of a story, right? We have a setting. We have creation. God made the world. God declared it good. And then we have a problem. Something has happened that's wrecked God's good world, and that's sin. We need redemption. We need some hope. We need some restoration. And then we have the happily ever after in heaven. It's interesting because those four parts, the creation, fall, redemption, restoration, are, I believe, hardwired into our brains, into our psyche, that we want to be a part of a story. In marketing, in my world right now, I find that stories are very powerful in business as well, where people want to find that, you know, or we talk a little bit about how every business has an ideal client. And that ideal client or ideal customer wakes up every single day in the middle of their own story. And that story is full of problems. There's things that they need to do that day. Maybe they have a toothache and they need to see a dentist to win their story. Maybe they have a DIY project and so they need to learn how to renovate a home. Andy, you'd know all about that. It's the focus of, if I'm going to win this story, which includes a beautifully renovated home, I need to learn how to do this. So to win that story, I'm going to need to learn some skills. All of a sudden, the redemption part comes in that, you know, either Home Depot or some contractor comes along and says, I can help you achieve the victory that you want, the restoration that you need. And all of a sudden we become very interested in their product, their solution. And then at the end of the day, you have this beautiful, shiny new home, or in the toothache story, you don't have a toothache anymore and you've won your day for that day. And stories are very powerful in communicating. So a lot of companies come to me and say, oh, help us tell our story because we heard you're the story guy. And I'm like, actually, nobody really cares about your story any more than we care about the story of Clorox bleach. Right? If you find out Clorox bleach was like, you know, started in the 50s, it was a family recipe passed down. They learned how to perfect bleach and now it's available to us for these many years. Well, no one really cares about that. When do they care about Clorox bleach? When it affects their story, which is my story is I want to wear my beautiful white shirt for my big presentation, but it's got this big stain on it. Who's going to help me? Who's going to be my redemption here? Clorox bleach is going to come in and help me and I can give my presentation, which is winning my story for the day. So the translation is this. We talk a lot about stories and how important they are here, but actually they're important to every single human being. And if we can craft our story and help people win their story, we can actually become a lot more appealing to them. How that applies to the apologetics world, I'm not sure. That's your guys' job. You guys can figure that out. Now, that's why you're paid the big bucks. I just know that's that right. I've always been taught that stories are powerful.
Yeah.
And it's getting into other people's stories that they become very interested, helping them win their story.
One of the things that, John, you know that I'm a part of is a part of the teaching team at the church I'm at, Northview. We do sermon review and preview. So we critique each other. I like to call it a soul spanking. And I think you've been a part of that.
I've spanked a few people myself.
You've spanked a few souls? And, you know, by the way, one of the rules that we have is if you haven't had your soul spanked, that you can't spank another soul. So you need to go through that process because it hurts.
That's just a good life principle, I think.
One of the consistent critiques over the years that I've been a part of this is people wanting to preach the gospel but not doing so with implementing story. The best preaching is that preaching which is done in cooperation with story. And anyone who's done any public speaking, you know the immediate engagement that an audience will give you as soon as you begin to tell a story, especially a personal story, that you will immediately suck them back in. And it has a power to be able to speak to the heart. Now, you were saying, John, and this is an important point, that it has this ability as well to turn off the logical aspects of your mind. And that is absolutely true. That there's a couple implications there. One, it means that you need to be careful to the kinds of stories you're hearing and what they're being used to sell you, because not everything you're being sold is good. Mm-hmm. This came out, by the way, when I was learning debate with Dr. Craig. One of the things that he brought up, and the more that I've studied this, I've learned, and that is that the greatest debate tactic that you can do is tell a gut-wrenching story that sides with you. And in fact, the only way to combat that is not with a logical argument. The only way to combat that is with an equally gut-wrenching story that supports your view. And so it's interesting to me that story can be used both positively and it can be used negatively as well.
I get one quote from Bob Edbuster. I don't know if you've heard of her. She's a Christian. She's a consultant for Pixar, 21st Century Fox, Disney, all this. So she's into the story piece of this. She says, in our culture, he who tells the best story wins. Creating great narratives that produce epiphanies involves a particular talent that applies far beyond film and changes the way you write books, marketing copy, funding proposals, research reports, sermons, and so much more. It applies to all those and more.
Terry, I would say that this would be, I'm curious what you think here, but fundamentally, I would say this is where Christians have really dropped the ball in engaging with culture with regards to movies. Our culture has told better stories than we have.
Yeah.
And it is persuasive. It's one of the reasons why I often engage with doing movie reviews with groups of people and helping them to think through how to dissect a story, because people are so often sucked into a story and then start to buy whatever sort of logical argument they're selling through that story.
Totally agree. We have the best story. It follows the very foundation in which God has wired us, the creation, fall, redemption, restoration. And in every Christian life, God is doing the same thing, creation, fall, redemption, restoration, as a part of his global plan for this world.
We want to pick up one more point. People don't mind you talking about God where you work, Basically, I think that's what you were saying. Mm-hmm. I read a book lately called Learning to Speak God from Scratch, Jonathan Merritt, and he talks about religious conversations. There's not a whole lot of that going on these days. So statistics show people not talking, engaging at all. So very low in that area. But he does say also that we are still very spiritual people. And there is people out there that still want to engage with us, even in your job or your other people's jobs.
Yeah. That was a bit of a surprise to me, because I think sometimes if you hang out with just apologetic-minded people, the apologetis of the world, as Craig Hazin calls them, you tend to think that all the world is atheist and all atheists are super hostile. And while there is a lot, and they get a lot of press and certainly dominate sometimes your social media feeds or whatever, it's not the case with, I'd say, the majority of people. There was times where I would be at a training event and I would hear the person up front talk about God. And sometimes they would actually, the next speaker would talk about God, but then interchange it with the universe, which is, another whole philosophical idea. Mm-hmm. But every time the word God was mentioned, I was like, whoa, can you do that? Can you do that? And then it started to happen so often that I thought, well, I guess it's okay to talk like this. My coach was talking to me and kind of motivating me to be more into who I am, not just being another consultant, but actually lead from my heart. And he said, and your heart, you have this passion for God and loving people. And I thought, well, thanks for noticing that. That is my passion. He said, mm-hmm. Yeah, you need to tell people that that's your passion. And I'm like, you can't do that. He goes, no. Even the atheists want to know that you're praying for them. Like, I thought that was the best line. It's like, maybe they actually do. Maybe in business, people are so desperate to get ahead or to grow their business or just be able to feed their family and pay their mortgage that they would look to God in some way. And that was a big flag. Now, of course, everyone listening is thinking, well, okay, what God are they talking about? And that's worth a conversation, because we do need to figure out, what are you talking about? God, the universe, how many gods? Is it Jesus? Can you bring up Jesus? Is it okay to talk about him? And is it okay to talk about what Jesus actually taught us about how to get to God, or how God came to us, I should say. So those are just conversation starters in a place that I thought was taboo to even begin the conversation. Right. And that surprised me.
I think I would follow up on that to say, that not only do I agree, but maybe to give a little more context to that. What we have found and I found is that it's primary questions, issues people are quite happy to talk about, such as does God exist kind of questions. Another one would be the value of human life would be another one. People are happy to talk about the value of human life. Now, it's the secondary type questions that can get a whole lot more dicey. But one of the things I find is that a lot of Christians tend to want to have secondary conversations. They've forgotten that they need to have a primary conversation first. So, for example, Christians are passionate about, say, abortion. So they want to have abortion conversations. And I'm telling you, that's going to lead to a heated conversation. It often won't go well. However, you could talk about, and people are quite happy to talk about, the value of human life. That's a question that people are quite open to. One of the things I talk to people about and just would encourage is get used to starting with primary questions and engaging with people at that fundamental level before you jump into these secondary issues.
Yeah, and I think maybe what my surprise was that there's a lot more openness to just some idea of God. So it's not even does God exist. It's like, I've given tons of talks on the 7 evidences for God. It's a circumstantial case that I believe is watertight. It includes fine-tuning and cosmological argument, moral argument, all that kind of stuff. But I think if I could use people's time better, I would say, you know what? Most people actually do already believe in God mm-hmm. in some kind of, it's who is God.
I would argue that I'd say 99% of the conversations I've ever had with even atheists, I would say that, and I know this might be kind of a little controversial, but most of them believe in some sort of God, even the atheist one. It's very rare that I find that they don't. Most of the arguments that I hear from them isn't about whether or not God exists. It's just about whether or not they like the God that they have a concept of. One of the other things that has surprised me in doing my PhD work in the UK is every time I go over there and the conversations I have and what I'm seeing happening there, God is still very much a part of the landscape in Europe, although we're often told that that's not the case. That is a myth. I remember my first day at Aberdeen University, walking onto campus, and they were having a crystal bazaar, you know, in one of the main halls selling New Age crystals. Like, people are quite into, like you're saying, John, God in that broad sense. And those sorts of conversations are happening. I'm also amazed, by the way, how much the spiritual is very much a part of people's landscape and the way that they're thinking, from ghosts to demons or whatever else that might entail, angels. That's a part of people's narrative. They think in those ways, they talk in those ways, and are quite open to engage in those conversations.
Well, we're going to have to wrap it up here. We've given our listeners 4 points to kind of chew on and think about. Would there be any suggestions of books that you would point them in?
The one that I've kind of gone all in on is by probably a well-known Christian author. His name's Donald Miller. My grandma handed me a copy of Blue Like Jazz about 18 years ago now. And loved it. I've followed Donald Miller ever since. Met him a few times sporadically when he was in town. But then he came out with this business book about called Building a Story Brand. And it was all about the power of story to grow your business, to market your business, to talk about what you do in a way that actually captures people's attention.
Yeah,
I read that book and I was like, this is a total shift for Donald Miller. Like, he went from writing Christian memoirs to a business marketing book. And yet the thing has gone bonkers in the business world. And so I've kind of ridden the coattails of Miller's success and, you know, help people implement the book principles. But the book itself is written by a Christian author who's writing about Christian principles, the power of story, but doesn't mention Jesus at all in it. Now, I mean, some people have their issues with Donald Miller, and, you know, we have our issues with all authors that put their ideas public at some point. But this book is just, to me, if you have a business and you want to use Christian principles of telling good stories, this would be the one that I would recommend reading.
Now, more than that, though, John, you've actually gone and gotten training in this subject and helping people build their own story brand. So if our listeners have a business and they're interested in knowing more about this and getting coaching, this is something that you do?
Yeah, for sure. It's something I enjoy doing. I like meeting people. I like hearing the stories of every business. I think there's a heroic story in there. But then the story actually that you tell publicly is totally different, because it's not your story at all. It's the story of your customer. And that's where most of us get it wrong. We talk about we do our marketing, we talk about our business in a way that we're the hero, and it just misses out on an opportunity to connect with other people who are the hero of their story. If you ever been on an encounter with someone, maybe a date or something, they just talked about themselves the whole time, you're going to be repulsed by that. And you're like, well, ask me a question, get interested in my life, and then I'll be more interested in you. And a lot of us do our marketing just like that. We just talk about ourselves and how great we are and all the achievements and what we want to do. And we missed an opportunity to actually connect with the people we need to connect with.
I remember when we were creating the Human Project in its infancy, you were the first person that we consulted on that project. I remember you coming in a number of weeks helping us with it. You are truly gifted in this area, man. And I can't speak your praises high enough. How could people find out more information about you and get in contact with you?
I appreciate that, Andy. My company is called Get Clear Consulting. I hope we're available online easily. Getclear.ca is our website. And you can, if you're interested in talking with me, you can schedule a free consultation call. We'll just sit down for half an hour and talk about your business. So I hope I can help add some value to your listeners in some way.
Great. Yeah, thanks for joining us again, John. This has been great. Thanks again so much.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks so much, Terry.
I just want to bring it back around to apologetics. The ultimate apologetic. Okay, this is a quote from William Lane Craig. He's an apologist. He says, "More often than not, it is what you are rather than what you say that will bring an unbeliever to Christ. This, then, is the ultimate apologetic, for the ultimate apologetic is your life." And just some scripture, Titus 2:7-8. "Show yourselves in all respects to be a model of good works, and in your teaching show integrity, dignity, and sound speech that cannot be condemned, so that an opponent may be put to shame, having nothing evil to say about us."